keep putting this down there. Working?
No.
You turn it on? All right. Anyway, you just have to listen carefully. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari. Nijana Pallavat Giribada Thakure Nijana Pallavat Giribada Thakure Anna Prajajana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana Unate Ramana Chalte Ramana Chalte Jai Ho Radham Padhava Kunja Biharde Jai Ho Radham Padhava Kunja Biharde Gopijana Vallabha Giribada Thakure Gopijana Vallabha Giribada Thakure Satashi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachalana, Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Mahasila Prabhupada, Kijaya. ISKCON, Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Kijaya. Anandagoti, Vaishnava, Vrindi, Kijaya, Namacharya, Srila Haridas, Bhakti, Kijaya. Prem, Se, Goho, Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Sri Dvaita, Gadadha, Sri Vasati, Gaur, Bhaktivedanta, Kijaya. Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopagopata Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Girigo Radham Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Majuradham Kijai Navadipadam Kijai Jagadavasami Kijai Yumanamai Kijai Srimati Lassi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaur Prabhananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So today is a very special day of the Vaishnava calendar. We're not going to be reading from the Bhagavatam as normal, but we're going to be speaking about the two great personalities that appeared today. Of course, Lord Vamana, and we have Srila Jiva Goswami. I'll speak about Jiva Goswami first, because it's very short. So, Om Magana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Maha. So, of course, Srila Jiva Goswami is the youngest of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and he is the son of Anupama. Anupama is the brother of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis. So Anupama, of course, was a great devotee of Lord Ram. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to convince him to worship Krishna instead of Ram, but he refused. So, in other words, even within our sampradaya, worship of Ram is very nice. So if someone is very attached to Lord Ram, as people are here in Fiji, we should appreciate that. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested his dedication by trying, Rupa and Sanatana tested Anupama's dedication by trying to convince him to give up chanting Sita Ram. And he was unable to do that. He was crying all night long. So anyway, so he's the father of Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami was born with a golden complexion, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he had Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association in a place called Ramakeli. Ramakeli is where Lord Chaitanya met Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis. And that's where he first initiated Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. He said, your names are now Rupa and Sanatana. Before their names were Dabir Kash and Shakara Malik, which were basically Muslim names. So they had been associated with the Muslims. Anyway, so he had Lord Chaitanya's association when he was very young. He worshipped Radha and Krishna deities. He had dreams of dancing with Radha and Krishna, with Gornatai. And when he got a little older, he went to Navadvip to see Lord Nityananda. And he met Navadvip at Srivas Thakur's house. Asachi Mata actually personally fed him, because he was just a young boy at that particular time. And he took a tour of Navadvip, the Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, with Lord Nityananda. So you see, Lord Nityananda was directly his guru. Very, very interesting. And then he was sent by Lord Nityananda to a place called Kashi. Kashi is a place where generally there's impersonalists, but there's great scholars there too. And he studied under the jurisdiction of this devotee named Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So then eventually he went to Vrindavan after he studied Sanskrit grammar, rhetoric, poetry very, very thoroughly, so he would be able to carry out his mission for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he went to the Radha Damodar temple, and he was given service by Srila Rupa Goswami, and his service was a very menial service. So this is a very important instruction for us, as we find in the instructions of what it means to be a brahmachari, that one is given different services to evoke one's humility. Just like one may come to the Krishna conscious movement and be very exalted, or very rich, or very handsome, or whatever, you know, all these different opulences. But the guru actually immediately gives him some service, like wash the toilets. I remember when I joined the movement, that's what happened. You know, the temple president said, guess what? You should wash the toilets. And I said, well, I'm from a very rich family. He said, that means more, you should wash the toilets. You understand? So that's really the point. But unfortunately, there's many of us who become very proud as we so-called advance in devotional service, and get to the point where we don't want to serve anyone, we want to be served. It's like the Sunday feast. Generally, the devotees, they push their way in first in line, and they're thinking, we're devotees, and we couldn't be prouder. And if you don't like it, we're going to chant a little louder. You know, so they actually drive away the guests. I mean, it's just like if you have a guest in your house. Can you imagine if a guest comes to your house and you invite him for prasadam and you tell the guest, wait till I eat, and then you can take prasadam? Would that be an offense? That's actually an offense. There's a karmic reaction to that, too. Probably the eyes of your eyes will be plucked out by the vultures of hell in the next life. So the same thing happens if you don't treat people nicely. If you're a devotee, initiated devotee, and some new person comes, and you don't treat them as the guest, because this is Krishna's house, and you're Krishna's son, or Krishna's daughter, then you may have some vultures next life taking care of your little eyeballs. So don't take a chance. Anyway, getting back to the point, that Jiva Goswami was given very menial service. He was proofreading Rupa Goswami's books like the Bhakti Rasa and Mita Sindhu, and was rendering menial service. That means cleaning up and cleaning their clothes and cooking for them and doing all these things for Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. I mean, that would be pretty nice, serving Rupa and Sanatana Goswami in any capacity. So he also accepted Rupa as his guru. And what happened is that he got another instance of training in humility. Once upon a time, this great, wandering rhetorician, because that's a fancy word for all of you, but this wandering person who went around defeating everybody with argumentation. His name was Rupa Narayan. And so he would go and challenge people to debate. And when he won, he would get something called a Jaya Patra. That means a leaf or a paper that says you're victorious, because you probably know that. And he challenged Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Excuse me. He challenged Rupa and Sanatana Goswami to a debate. That's all right, that's all right. No, no. Rohini, calm down. So he challenged Rupa and Sanatana. I know. I'll ask for water if I want it. I'm an adult. So he challenged Rupa and Sanatana Goswami to a debate, and Rupa and Sanatana Goswami didn't want to waste their time, and they said, all right, we'll just sign. You won the debate. And he went away saying, I am defeated, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Then he came across Srila Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami said, what? You thought you defeated them? Okay. I'm their nephew. Have a little argument with me. And so in 3 days, the poor guy was demolished, in other words, destroyed, and with argumentation by Jiva Goswami, and it's described he had an accidental call of nature, which means he couldn't control his... Anyway, I think you understand what that means. So then Jiva Goswami went to Rupa and Sanatana and said, you know, I defeated this guy. And Rupa Goswami said, guess what? If you're proud of your abilities, that means you're not qualified to be a sannyasi, so we don't want to see you anymore. So he sent Jiva Goswami out of Vrindavan, and Jiva Goswami was living in a tree, in the hollow of a tree, for a whole year. Actually, it's amazing, a whole year. And finally, Sanatana Goswami, who was Rupa Goswami's guru, said to him, you're not following one of the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Rupa Goswami was thinking, what instruction am I not following? Let me think about it. And then he thought, there's one instruction, Jiva Doya, which means compassion to Jiva souls. So it also means compassion to Jiva Goswami. So he understood that he needed to ask Jiva Goswami to come back, so Jiva Goswami came back and rejoined Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Jiva Goswami also primarily taught something called Swakya Ras. That means the married love between Radha and Krishna rather than Parakya Ras. Parakya means unmarried relationship. And swakya means relationship that is married. So he taught the married relationship between Radha and Krishna because he felt his disciples were not qualified to hear about the more intimate loving exchanges that were done in the unmarried context. So this is a very important instruction for us too, because sometimes, as they say, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Did you ever hear that saying before? So devotees sometimes think they can understand so much about Radharani. Radhe, 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 Radhe. And actually the GBC passed one particular resolution. You're not supposed to just like go on for a long period of time chanting Radhe, Radhe. Because people have started to take things cheaply, even in the Krishna consciousness movement in many ways. First of all, one has to realize they're not the body. I don't think many of us have realized that. Then you have to realize you're a servant to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then you have to get rid of all your anarthas. And we're a far cry from those stages. So we need to hear the basic philosophy. Anyway, so Jiva Goswami understood his disciples were neophyte and they couldn't understand Parakya. And in addition, Jiva Goswami also inspired the Emperor Akbar, the great Emperor Akbar, who was very favorable to all the different religions. And the Emperor Akbar arranged for money to construct many of the Goswami temples. So in other words, a lot of the money that came to construct the temples of Radha Govinda, Radha Madan Mohan, came from the Muslims. It's interesting, the Mughals. Of course, Akbar's grandson was the opposite. Does anyone know what his grandson's name was? Aurangzeb. And his Aurangzeb's father was Shahjahan, who was so much in love with his wife. So it's interesting that first you had the mode of goodness in Akbar, then you had the mode of passion in his son. Look at it. I was just thinking about this. It just came to mind. Shahjahan, because Shahjahan was so passionate after his dear... What was his wife's name? Does anyone remember? What? Yes, Mumbaz. So he was so passionate after her, he converted a Lord Shiva temple into her memorial. And he got the reaction of being put in jail by his son, right? Actually, originally, the Taj Mahal was a Shiva temple. Tejo Mahal. So that means it's a place of Lord Shiva. Interesting. And if you go there, if you were able to go inside, you see Om written everywhere and also insignias of Lord Shiva, and it was converted to a memorial or mausoleum for this lady. Anyway, so that's the mode of passion, and then the mode of ignorance comes later with Aurangzeb. So you have goodness, passion, and ignorance. Father, son, grandson. Okay. Anyway, so... Let's see, another thing. Oh yes, he taught Akbar to become a vegetarian. And he made Akbar vow that even though he was a Kshatriya, he wouldn't go hunting in Braj. He was hunting in Braj. Also, he taught Shyamananda, Narottamadas Thakur, and Srinivasacharya. And his temple was the Radha Damodar temple, which incidentally, not just incidentally, by Krishna's arrangement, Srila Prabhupada stayed at. And in that Radha Damodar temple, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan would have regular philosophical discussions. Of course, he's most famous for the Shatshandarbhas, the six treatises on the aspects, all the aspects of devotional service, beginning with the basic philosophy, culminating in the relationship between Radha and Krishna. Jiva Goswami wrote many literatures. One of the literatures I'm reading right now is called the Gopal Champu, and Prabhupada said this Gopal Champu actually contains all the information about Braj and the relationships in Braj, and if one reads it, one will understand the intimate loving exchanges in Braj. So that's Jiva Goswami's book. So that's Jiva Goswami, and primarily I want to talk about Lord Vamanadeva, who appeared today. Of course, Lord Vamanadeva is a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he appeared in order to trick Bali Maharaj, take everything away from Bali Maharaj, and enable Bali Maharaj to realize the topmost aspect of devotional service, which is Atma Nivedanam. So, let's tell the story. This is from the Bhagavatam. So, once upon a time, there was Prahlad Maharaj. And as we're reading the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj is there, and Prahlad Maharaj's father was killed, and Prahlad Maharaj got married. He had a son named Virochan, and Virochan had a son named Bali. This is very interesting. So, of course, Bali also had a son. Does anyone know what Bali's son's name was? It's a Ted. What? Banasura. Banasura. So you see that Prahlad's sons really have a lot to do with Krishna's pastimes, which is really interesting, even when Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago. So anyway, so after Lord Nrsimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu, he promised Prahlad Maharaj that he would never kill any of his descendants again. And so Bali was assured not to be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Bali Maharaj was the head of the demons, and yesterday we were talking about Shukracharya. We gave an elaborate exposition of what it means to be a Shukracharya, I mean an Acharya of Semen, or a family Acharya. And Shukracharya was the demon's spiritual master. Even at that point, he was the demon's spiritual master. He continued. And at the end of the story, we'll tell about how he got even more angry at the demigods and more angry at Lord Vishnu. So, being the demon's spiritual master, he assisted them in fighting against the demigods. So what happened is one time, Bali Maharaj was fighting against the demigods, and he died. This is way before the sacrifice, way before he met Lord Vamanadeva. He died in the battle. So you would think that's the end of the story. But Shukracharya had this ability, it was called Mrityu Sanjeevani, the ability to bring someone back to life after they died. It's very nice. It's some mantras that are there in the Atharva Veda. You can learn them too. But it won't be effective because you have to take them from a bona fide spiritual master. And there's no bona fide spiritual master I know who knows them. So, anyway, so he brought Bali Maharaj back to life. There's an interesting story also in the Mahabharata of how the demigods wanted to learn this mantra. And so Brihaspati sent his son Kacha to learn this mantra from Shukracharya. So Brihaspati, who was the priest of the demigods, Rivo. So Brihaspati, who was the priest of the demigods, gave his son as a disciple to Shukracharya, who was very envious of him. So this Kacha, he was studying with Shukracharya for like 100 celestial years to learn the mantra. While he was studying to learn the mantra, all the different procedures, then Shukracharya's daughter fell in love with him. Does anyone remember what the name of Shukracharya's daughter is? Devyani. And Devyani fell in love, even though the guru's daughter is supposed to be considered like either one's mother or sister. This is the proper relationship. You can't violate that particular relationship. So after Kacha had graduated and learned this mantra, how to bring people back to life, wait till everybody gets settled, after he had learned this mantra, then what happened is that Devyani said to him, now we can get married. And he said, you're just like my sister. You know, I can't marry you. And she got very angry, just like the story we told yesterday, how Urvasi got angry, remember? So she got very angry and she cursed Kacha. She said, even though you spent 100 years learning this mantra will not be effective. And then he cursed her. He said, because you have cursed me for no reason whatsoever, I curse that you will not marry a Brahmin. You will marry a Kshatriya instead. And of course, that was a prohibited marriage. That's called pratilom, where a lady of a higher caste or class marries a man of a lower caste, because it just doesn't work out like that. Like if a lady is much more intelligent and much more in the mode of goodness than the husband, it's a disaster. Just like the husband may be watching the World Cup and the wife wants to chant Hare Krishna. And then the wife starts preaching to the husband. And you know what happens then. The man gets very angry because he doesn't like to be preached to by his wife. And there's a disaster. So it's better that the man is on a higher status. If the man is a Brahmin and his wife wants to watch the World Cup, then the man can tell his wife not to and she just has to go along with him. Hopefully. Of course, Kali Yuga is the opposite. But anyway, so in any case, so that's how Kacha lost the ability to perform this Mrityu Sanjeevani, and Devyani got cursed, etc. So, getting back to the story of Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was brought back to life by Shukracharya, and then Bali Maharaj began to worship his guru. And it's interesting to note that even if your guru happens to be a demon, if you worship him, you get powerful. That's interesting. So, of course, one should not accept a demon guru, because you become powerful in demoniac arts. You won't become powerful in devotional service. So he began to worship his guru, and his guru actually gave him some good instructions. It's not that Shukracharya was completely wrong about everything. He said, you worship Vishnu. But he said, you worship Vishnu not in an unmotivated way, but you worship Vishnu to get power. You worship Vishnu to get position. You worship Vishnu to defeat your enemies. So, of course, this is better than nothing. As it's said in the Bhagavatam, Akama Sarva Kama Moksha Kama Udaradi Tibrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. Whether one is full of material desires, free of material desires, or desirous of liberation, he should worship Krishna. So that's why when people come to the temple, we don't smash them for material desires. We don't say, you're a nonsense. Why are you driving around that big car? Give it to Krishna. You know, sometimes we have to be very tolerant when people come and they're in Maya, which is most of the cases. We have to say, oh, use it for Krishna. Or give a little 10% of your money for Krishna, please. Or sponsor a kalash. You know, we have to be tricky like this. So anyway, Bali was advised to worship Vishnu to, like you have this, what, Satyanarayan Katha. He was advised to do Satyanarayan Katha. Om Jai Jagadisha Hari, they said. So he did that and he became very powerful, and Brahaspati, the demigods didn't properly respect him. So the demigods became very, very weak. So Bali was able to take over heaven and do 100 horse sacrifices. That's the price to go to to actually take the position of Indra, is you perform 100 Ashwamedha yajnas. And of course in Kali Yuga, Ashwamedha and Gomedha, that means cow sacrifice and horse sacrifice, are prohibited. So we don't do those things. And plus we don't want to go to heaven. We want to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then what happened is that Indra got saved by his mother, which is interesting. It's interesting, in many of these instances, you know, the mother steps in and saves the son. And it shows how much love the mother has for the son. Even Diti, who is the mother of the demons, Yudhaichas, she tries to get even for her son's sake with Indra, but she's not able to do it. So you find this particular theme of motherly love is there a lot in the Vedic literatures. So Aditi, who was the mother of Indra, she wanted to save her son, and she went to her husband, and she said to her husband, we got to do something about this. And her husband said, all right, here's some devotional service for you. And she executed this thing by called payovrata, that means living by drinking milk, a great austerity. So we also can achieve Lord Vishnu's mercy by engaging in great austerities. But our austerity is not a physical or bodily austerity. Our austerity is what? Does anyone know what our austerity is? What?
Intending
Mangalarti. Good, yes, sadhana, very good. Bhagavati is a good answer. And preaching. Sankirtan, that's our austerity. It's described that one moments of preaching, and of course the sadhana too, cannot even be compared to millions of years of physical austerity, like standing on the tip of your toes, like Hiranyakashipu did, or other austerities, like can't even be compared to thousands of millions of Ashwamedha sacrifices. We're so fortunate in Kali Yuga. Kalairdoshinadhadra Maharajan, Ashteko Mahatguna, Kirtanadeva Krishnasya, Mukta Sangha Parambaja. Just by engaging this Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we go back to Godhead. We don't have to do, basically, we don't have to do anything else. Of course, you have to follow four regular principles. But that's part of it. It's very easy. Simple process. Anyway, so this Aditi, she was advised by Kashyap, her husband, to engage in austerity. And then Lord Vishnu, at the end of this austerity, Lord Vishnu appeared with his four arms. And he said, you should worship your husband. It's a good instruction for all you wives out there. It's interesting. Husband worship. What do you think about that? So anyway, Seth, you should worship your husband because within your husband, this is the reason, within your husband is the plenary port, my plenary portion. In other words, Krishna was actually manifest within the semen of Kashyapa Muni. So that's why she was advised to worship the husband. Of course, we worship everybody because we see Krishna in everyone's heart. Everyone is a temple of Krishna. And that way we can respect and love everybody. And that's why we offer obeisances to Krishna. So there was the plenary portion in Kashyapa that was transferred to Aditi's womb. And while Aditi was pregnant, Lord Brahma began to pray to Aditi, and on the Shravana Dwadasi, this is called the Shravana Dwadasi. This is, even though we are following Ekadasi on this day, it's the Dwadasi. Ekadasi means 11, Dwadasi means 12, the 12th day of the moon. And the reason for that is when you have a mixed Ekadasi. I don't know if I should get into the details of what I mean by mixed. In other words, two moon days on one solar day. See, the moon days don't always coincide, with the solar days. You follow that? Because the moon has a cycle, roughly 28 days. And those days, sometimes you get like 2 days in one, two moon days in one day. You'll get the Ekadasi and Dwadasi in one day. A Triodasi and Dwadasi on one day. Well, from the Purnima. So therefore, on a mixed Ekadasi, you're not supposed to follow the Ekadasi, you follow the Dwadasi. So today is Dwadasi. And incidentally, because tomorrow is the appearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you fast for something that occurs on the day after an Ekadasi fast, on the actual Ekadasi day. You don't fast on the day after. Is that clear? So today, whatever fasting we're doing for Bhakti Vinod Thakur should be done, even though tomorrow is his appearance day. So this Ekadasi, or this Dwadasi, is called the Shravana Dwadasi, and it's also called Vijaya. Vijaya means victorious. So it's a very important Dwadasi and Ekadasi. So Lord Vishnu appeared from the womb of Aditi, and he had four arms, and then he transformed himself into a small dwarf form. A dwarf means for someone who's very, very short. And actually, technically speaking, I mean, even though he's called a dwarf, there's another name for a short person, because a dwarf actually has, his features are distorted. So technically speaking, it wasn't a dwarf, even though they used the word dwarf, because it's the meaning of dwarf, I think some of you may have studied English, means it's like, it's someone's like squeezed down. That's called dwarfism. But if someone is just short, so in other words, he was very short. Let's not use the word dwarf, although the word dwarf is there in the English, but technically it's not dwarf. So anyway, so he changed this small form, very small Brahmin boy, and he was given the sacred thread by Brihaspati, and the demigods offered him different things like his umbrella and his kumandalu, his pot for carrying the water. And immediately he exhibited a Brahman effulgence. That means he was so bright, it was like unbelievably more bright than the sun. And everyone could understand he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first thing he did, practically right after he was born, because he didn't have to grow up and get educated, which is kind of nice. First thing he did is he went to the sacrifice by Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj naturally respected Brahmins. This is actually part of the etiquette, Vaishnava etiquette, that Brahmins are supposed to be fed first before you eat. I mean, there's a whole system. Like you see in the Mahabharata, whenever there's a ceremony being done by Yudhisthira Maharaj or anyone else, any of the other Kshatriyas, one of the things they have is Brahma Bhojana. That means they feed all the Brahmins. And anyway, sometimes one of the demigods takes the position of Brahman, and he eats so much that there's nothing left over. Anyway, so Bali washed Vamanadeva's feet, and he said, ask for a donation. You know, whatever you want, I'll give you. That would be interesting if I went to people's houses and they said, whatever you want, we'll give you. They never do that. They said, we'll give you what we want to give you. Use $1. So anyway, so sometimes you get a big envelope, everyone's like, what? And you open it up, it's $1 coin inside. So anyway, it's called Damn Cheap Bubble. So in the traditional system, you ask the Brahmin what he wants. Just like, let's give some examples of that. When Visvamrita Muni went to see King Dasarath, King Dasarath said to Visvamrita Muni, he said, whatever you want, we'll give you. And what did Visvamrita Muni ask for? Does anyone know the Ramayana here? He asked for Ram. Can you imagine that? I go in your house and he said, give me your son. He said, can we give you something else, Maharaj? So anyway, so he asked for Ram. Ram was given. I mean, it's an amazing story. Or with, actually it's very similar in the story of Lord Nityananda's appearance. Hadaya Pandit, who was his father, a Brahmin came, sannyasi came, and he said, give me your son. And he gave him his son. Amazing, isn't it? So that's how Brahmins used to be respected. Of course, nowadays Brahmins are not Brahmins anymore, so we don't have to really give them whatever they want or else we'll be in trouble. So Bali Maharaj was asked Vamanadeva, whatever you want, we'll give you. Wife, we'll even give you a wife. Imagine someone comes into your house and says, can I have a wife? So, that'd be interesting. Well, if he's a king, he has many ladies there, so it's appropriate. So, he said, basically, the first thing Vamanadeva said was that he glorified Bali's ancestors. He said, you're such a great personality. Your ancestors were Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and Pallad. And then he asked for his benediction. He said, I just want 3 paces of land, 3 steps of land. And Bali Maharaj said at that point, that's not so intelligent. You know, I could give you everything. I have the whole universe. I could give you mountains of gold, a planet, a whole planet for yourself. And so, you know, why are you so stupid? They didn't say it like that exactly. And Vamanadeva said something very educational for us. He said, if you're not satisfied with a little, you're not going to be satisfied with a lot. In other words, if you're not satisfied with 3 paces of land, how will you be satisfied with more. And Krishna, of course, illustrates this fact in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Albertam Gyanamaitena, Gyanino Nichavayana, Kamarupena Kuntia, Dushprena Lenacha, that one is never satisfied, and one is never able to satisfy one's desires by making the endeavor to satisfy the desires. Because it's like, never satisfied and burns like fire. Or as Prabhupada gives the example, if you throw petrol on a fire, it's not going to put out the fire, it's going to further inflame the fire. So this is a, you know, important point for us, that we think, you know, the more money I have, the happier I'll be, or the bigger vehicle I have, the more, the better computer I have, or the better mobile phone. Like people, like here, now people in Fiji here are just hankering after smartphones, right? And everyone has so many smartphones, the internet is very slow. Very frustrating for someone like me. So, in this way, they're like dangling the carrot in front of the jackass. And we're all jackasses. Because the further we move forward to get the carrot, you understand what I mean? The carrot, actually, if you attach the carrot to your head and you try to get the carrot goes at the same pace as you, and you never get the carrot. So that's like Maya. She keeps offering, oh, when I have that, I'll be happy. And you keep walking, walking, and working harder and harder, and pa, ma, parishama, palena, as described, pavarga, you understand? One starts foaming at the mouth, fainting, and they die unhappily. Okay, so Vamanadeva explained that, and I just want 3 paces of land, and Dali said, okay, that's what you want, you'll get. So he took his water pot out to signify that he was going to give this particular benediction or particular offering to Vamanadeva. And Shukracharya, his guru, said, no, this is Vishnu. He's going to take away everything. And Bali Maharaj said, but you told me to worship Vishnu. And Shukracharya said, yes, but not to give him everything, to get something from him. You're supposed to be, you know, business exchange. Like they have, if you go to Tirupati, then people are, and any big temples in India, they're making business exchanges with Krishna. They go to Balaji and they say, I'll give you this, if my business will be successful, then you're going to get 50%, and I'll get 50%. One time someone went to Balaji to make a business deal, and he thought, let my son give the donation. You heard this story already before. Let my son give the donation. They have this big hundi that's practically is this tall as that. And so he put the gold in the son's hand and held his son over the hundi, and lo and behold, the son slipped into the hundi. And he said, give me my son back, and I wouldn't give him the son back. So anyway, so he gave his son. And the son became a good pujari. So we should do that too. We have big hundis here. So Bali went with his water pot to signify giving the donation. Shukracharya said, no, he will take away everything. This is Vishnu. And Shukracharya said, charity is not good if it endangers one's welfare. But Bali Maharaj said, you know, how can I lie? And then Shukracharya said something very funny. He said, lying is okay in certain circumstances. If you're flattering a lady, it's not my words. Don't worry, it's Shukracharya's words. If you're flattering a lady, say, oh, you look so nice, even if she doesn't. And or joking, and also he said in marriage, in earning money, which is, we probably actually said earning money, sometimes you have to lie. You have to say, for you there's no profit, when actually there's a profit. A businessman does that. Obviously, just like if you're selling your oil and everything like that, you say, I'm not making any money on this. I'm doing this because you're my friend. Naturally, you're doubling your money, but you don't tell anyone that. So in business, you do have to do that. And also sometimes in protecting your life. So it's not that Shukracharya was completely wrong, protecting Brahmins, protecting cows. Sometimes you do have to lie, but not when you're dealing with the Supreme Personality of God. Bali disagreed with him. Bali said, the earth cannot bear the weight of a sinful liar. This is very important for us too. We should always be telling the truth. Except in exceptional cases to save someone's life or to protect cows, to protect brahmanas. I mean, that's when a lie is allowed. Otherwise, the earth gets angry with you. And Shukracharya got so angry with his disciple, he cursed his disciple to lose everything, to be bereft of all opulences. So then Bali went ahead, and he tried to take water from his water pot to signify the offering, but Shukracharya made himself really small and entered into the spout of the water pot, and the water wouldn't come out. But Lord Vamanadeva, he understood what was happening, took some kusha grass and took out the eye of Shukracharya. So that's why, if you see any of these movies, you know, from the Mahabharata or the Ramayana, you see Shukracharya, he's like this, where one eye is black. You've seen that? Some of these movies from India. Because Shukracharya is blind in one eye, being blinded by the Supreme Personality of God. So from that point forward, he began to preach bogus philosophy too. He appeared in India later on as this, I think it was a person named Rupa Narayan, who was actually preaching this bogus mantra. Bogus mantra, is that Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, whatever it was. And that Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur was against. So he actually preached bogus philosophy later on, tried to interfere with Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Anyway, so then, after Bali Maharaj was able to pour the water out of the water pot, Lord Vamana increased his size to the size of the earth, he stepped over the earth, then he stepped over the universe, he kicked a hole in the second step in the covering of the universe, and the Ganges came in. It's called the Viraj River. And Lord Brahma gathered that in his Kamandalu. And Lord Brahma worshipped the Ganges and Jambavan. You all heard of Jambavan, who later appeared in Lord Rama's pastimes, circumambulated the whole universe and circumambulated Lord Vamanadeva. When Jambavan was very young, he was able to go all the way around the universe, but later on during the Ramayana pastimes, he wasn't even able to jump over the ocean to Lanka, so he became older at that particular point. And later on, his daughter married Krishna. His daughter's name was Jambavati. A very interesting story. And we told that story, part of that story, the other day from the Lita Madhava. So then the followers of Bali tried to kill Vamana. Some were killed, and Bali called them off. And then Garuda, the bird carrier of the Supreme Personality of God, had tied Bali up with the ropes of Varuna. And Lord Vamanadeva said, "You're a cheater. You promised me 3 steps of land, but you can only give 2. And so what are you going to do about that?" And Bali said, "You can put the 3rd step on my head. That's called Atmani Vedanam." Bali Maharaj is the acharya of that last process of devotional service, you know, which we're going to hear about tomorrow. Oh no, in the next week, when we talk about this next verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, and it ends with Atmani Vedanam, which means surrendering everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Bali gave his head to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was being punished, and Lord Vishnu praised Bali at that point. And he sent him down to this planet called Sutala. And in that Sutala planet, Bali resided. And he said to Bali Maharaj, "I will be the guard there in Sutala to protect you, and you will no longer be an illusion." And the demigods took back the heavenly planets, and everyone lived happily ever after. So that's the story of Lord Vamanadeva. So it's, I guess, time to greet the deities when the pujari comes out. So any questions or comments about this particular pastime or these pastimes and Jiva Goswami's activities, pastimes, or teachings? Any questions? No? Yeah, Vishwanath. Yeah.
So there are other
Yeah.
So how do we...
Well, first of all, when we worship Radharani, we have to mention Krishna, too. Like Prabhupada, when he was in Vrindavan and the devotees and the people, they're all devotees, of course, would say Radhe, Radhe to him, he would respond, Hare Krishna. Of course, interesting story. I got in the habit of just saying Radhe, Radhe when I was in Vrindavan, too. And then one day after that, about a week after that, I went to Mayapur, and people were saying Hare Krishna, and I was saying Radhe, Radhe back to them. And I got yelled at. By some of my godfathers, not by Prabhupada. But anyway, I mean, there's nothing, we're not banning Radharani. However, we should always have Radha with Krishna. Radharani doesn't like to be separated from Krishna, and Krishna doesn't like to be separated from Radha. So that's why we say Hare Krishna. And that's the proper mode of evoking Srimati Radharani. And that's why the GPC passed the resolution that we didn't want devotees chanting like Radhe, Radhe for hours and hours. And I've experienced that sometimes too. I was in the country of Serbia one time in the house of one of my disciples, and they were chanting Radhe, Radhe all night. I couldn't sleep. It was all night they went, Radhe, 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 Radhe. You know, ladies, of course. And I was thinking, whew, do they understand Radhe? Actually, Radharani means to serve in an unalloyed way. It's a very exalted topic. Even Shukadev Goswami, he didn't mention the name of Radharani in Srimad Bhagavatam for two reasons. One reason is he would have been in ecstasy. And the second reason is that he didn't think it appropriate to mention her name. I mean, just like, it's something, it's like you're not supposed to reveal your Ishtadeva, right? Or your beads. There's some injunction, you're not supposed to show your beads in public, nor your worshipable deity. So, in other words, these things are very personal. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he really wouldn't talk about these things except to his most intimate associates, like Swarup Damodar Goswami, like that, and Ramananda Roy, Sika Mahiti, and Sika Mahiti's sister. So these like four associates there that he would talk about these things. In ISKCON, it's become so prominent to discuss these things. I mean, even I do it, and you know, what can I say? That we're not aware that people are not really able to comprehend the essence of Radha and Krishna's activities. I mean, there's an essence of it, our activities, but we're projecting our mundane understanding. In other words, just like we may have a wife or a girlfriend, and we may hold their hand or kiss them or something like that, and then we hear about Radha and Krishna doing that, and then in our minds we're thinking, yeah, I understand what's happening. You understand what I mean? It's just like, it's not. It's really not like that. It's of a completely different quality. I mean, there's no sensual enjoyment. Each party is not thinking, let me enjoy this particular thing. Let me fulfill some need. Each party in Radha and Krishna, conjugal loving affairs, is thinking, let me please Krishna, even if I have to suffer. If my unhappiness is Krishna's, this is what Radharani says, if my unhappiness is Krishna's happiness, then my unhappiness is my happiness. Which is an interesting expression. In other words, it's just pure love. I mean, which we, other than, let's say, close to that is the love of a mother for a child. Other than that, we really haven't seen anything like that in this world. So there's this tendency to misunderstand Radha and Krishna. Instead of becoming purified, one gets putrefied. And even Prabhupada said, we worship the deities of Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Of course, Radha and Krishna are there. We're not denying Radha Goloka Bihari are there. But it's the mood of Lakshmi and Ryan, because the mood of actual worship of Radha and Krishna is Raghunuga. Raghunuga means spontaneous. But if we were to try to be spontaneous, we'd be spontaneously sleeping all day long and eating all day long and then, you know, offering to Krishna once a week. Like you see, many of these temples in India, they haven't changed the dress but once a month of the deities. And if you go, you were to touch the deities, you would actually get your hands dirty. You know, they take care of their house better than they decorate the deity in many places. what to speak of garlands and other things like that. So that's why we have this vidhi, you know, the rules and regulations, because we're not spontaneously attracted. We have to follow very strictly, because spontaneously, we'd be a mess. Isn't it? Most of us. If I say to you, just chant your rounds, or chant whatever number of rounds you want to chant, it doesn't matter. Just like there was one devotee, even outside of this country, said, just keep the beads warm. So most of us would just put the beads on the heater, keep them warm. You understand, like put them on the water heater or something like that. Or burn them in a fire. So we say 16 rounds because if you don't think about a chant 16 rounds, you won't chant many. If anything. So this way, you put on the intelligence platform. And that's vidhi. Later on, you become Raghunuga, you take up the platform of Raghunuga, and then you can understand more about the Radha and Krishna conjugal loving affairs. But as long as one is in the bodily platform, then Radha Krishna conjugal affairs are not able to be understood. I mean, in their deepest essence, they're not able to be understood. So one has to be very careful. Prabhupada said, even reading some parts of his books, one has to be careful. There were sahajas at one point who were reading about Radha and Krishna's loving exchanges, only that from Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada got upset. So we have to be really careful. Like, as we say, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And anyway, so if we... One thing that I've come to the realization of is if we preach Krishna consciousness, bring others to Krishna, then Radharani becomes very pleased to us and she reveals the spiritual realm to us. That's been my experience. Not, you know, if I simply sit down at Govardhan and think, Radha and Krishna appear to me, what is it called? Prakat. So, Prakato. Prakate? Ready? Can you say that in Hindi? Yeah. It appeared to me. I mean, I was watching this one Hindi film where this demon wanted, Shukracharya wanted big Rakshasa to appear before me. He said, something Rakshasa, Prakate! And he was getting angrier and angrier. And finally, this demon appeared, you know, this lady demon, appeared before him. So we shouldn't approach Radha and Krishna like that. If we want them to appear, like Prabhupada said, we should want them to see us first. And don't try to see Radha and Krishna, have them try to see you in service. And if they see you in service, they'll appear. I mean, it's a fact, absolutely sure, that if you please Krishna's representative, Yasha Srila Prabhupada, Yasha Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada, Yasha Prasada, Nandati Patopi, then you get everything. I mean, you'll be at preaching one day and Radha and Krishna will introduce themselves to you. Isn't it? You'll be at someone's house telling them about the four regulated principles, and then you'll look up and Radha and Krishna will be in front of you. That'll be nice. Otherwise you'd be like Ravana, you'll get Maya Radharani, or Maya Sita. You'll think you're Krishna conscious, but you'll be living an hallucination. Okay, on that happy note, let's offer our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Jiva Goswami Ki Jai.